Hey, I'm Josh, and this is Beyond the Numbers. This is a special edition where we're calling it Voices from the Field, where we have different conversations with pastors and ministry leaders across the U.S., asking them different questions based on their experiences and what they've seen God do within their lives. Today, we're here with Brent, and Brent has served multiple decades within the ministry, from churches ranging to small rural churches, as well as satellite campuses and even larger ones. Brent, would you just give us a brief introduction about yourself?
Yeah, I'm currently living in near Columbia, South Carolina. My wife and I live here. We have three kids that are young adults, and so we're doing the empty nest thing. I'm serving at a church here in Lexington, and like you said, been doing ministry going into my third decade, and probably will do this. I used to tell people I'd do it for free if I could, but you know, the idea of doing youth ministry for free, that's never going to be a reality. So yeah, still doing it though. I'm 55. I still enjoy it, you know, very much. I'm in some different roles than I was in the early years. I don't play as much dodgeball anymore, and that type of thing, but enjoy it.
That's awesome. Well, the topic that we're talking about today is based off of an episode that we played last week, which was just this idea of, for the tired, you know, kind of drained leader that's kind of running low on hope. It's me just kind of looking at what are some things that I wish I had told myself or knew when I first started out in the ministry. And for those tired leaders, it's the opportunity, one, to look back, or two, to gain and glean some advice and wisdom from other next-gen pastors, ministry leaders that have kind of been through it, and we can kind of learn from those mistakes, those successes, those failures. So let's start back to you when you were first starting out in the ministry. If you could go back and sit down with your younger self on even like that day one of ministry, what's one thing that you would say?
Yeah, it's funny because literally, so I came out of a background of working for 6 years in the NFL, and so I was volunteering in youth ministry, and the youth pastor left, and I figured, hey, I could help run an NFL football team. I could certainly run a youth ministry of 20 kids. And so I volunteered, and then I felt the Lord's call. And a year and a half later, I was the full-time youth pastor. I had quit my job and started working for the church. And I remember thinking, because I grew up a PK, that every day I'm going to come in and give the first hour to the Lord, and I'm going to pray and read my Bible every day. That's the first hour to the Lord. And that lasted for that one day. And I wish I could say that every day, you know, I wish I could say every day since then that I upheld that agreement. But I learned really quick that serving in church ministry, youth ministry in particular, was not coming in and just having, you know, time in the Word by yourself with the Lord. Like I learned ministry, it happens every day. It comes out of directions that you're not expecting it to come out of, and it never stops. If I could go back and tell my younger self something, I would definitely say, maybe that was too big of a promise to say the first hour every day, but I do this much better now. And of course, that was way, you know, several decades ago. But what I try to do early in the day is to sit and center, like, what am I going to do today that is gospel or ministry specific? Like, in other words, is there anything? And sometimes the answer is there's nothing that's planned. So, Lord, if this is going to happen, it's going to have to happen out of your providence. But I'll look and say, am I meeting with a kid today? Am I meeting with a volunteer today? You know, I serve as the chaplain for the local high school football team. And so I get to do that once a week. I get to share 5 minutes of devotions with, you know, 100 football players. So I'll say, like, what am I doing today that is going to be directly me communicating the gospel? And the reason why I say that is because actually so little of what we do in a day is communicating the gospel to youth. We're not like a public school teacher where we spend all of our days with kids. Actually, most of our days we don't spend really with kids at all, or at least not very much. If you're very active and you go to a lot of games and you're connecting with kids in one-on-ones, then you might be spending time with students every day. But an overwhelming part of the job of a typical youth pastor, next-gen person, it's administrative, it's preparatory, it's, you know, lesson planning and, you know, doing things that are not connecting the gospel and students. And so I try to look for, what's on my schedule. So last night, it was Wednesday night, and we had our Wednesday night middle school program. So I'm like, who can I connect with tonight? Because tonight's today's a day where I could connect and share the gospel with a kid. And so I would say go back and rather than trying to make a big commitment, like how much time am I going to spend with the Lord or what am I going to do and making an overcommitment, I would say look at your schedule and try to figure out where are the points during the week where you're going to be able to be in some gospel presenting capacity in front of students, just because that will probably come along a lot fewer than you thought when you went into this. You probably pictured yourself thinking, I'm going to get up every day and preach the word of God. And you'd be surprised that you don't do that as much as you think you do. So you got to look for it. And sometimes you got to make those opportunities and create them.
Awesome. So let's take that opening thing that you would say, and let's go a little deeper there. A lot of times people think that, especially as youth pastors, when we mess up, we often look at others and we're like, man, they have it all together. I just wish I wasn't such a screw up like that person. I know I've done that so many times. What's a failure or mistake you made early on in your ministry that at the time it felt like so crushing, but God ended up using that to help shape you and maybe even your ministry?
Yeah, that's a good one. I would say early on in my ministry, maybe the first, within the first year and a half of full-time ministry. So I was bivocational for a year and a half, and then I made the leap. And then probably the next year and a half to 2 years, I wouldn't have described it then as trying to be super youth pastor. But looking back now, I was trying to be super youth pastor. And what I mean by that is I was trying to do everything. We had a Sunday school program for high school students. We had a Wednesday midweek Bible study. We had a Friday night, youth night. We had small groups. Once a month we'd do some sort of activity, something fun or something service oriented. And we were meeting all the time. And I thought, man, that was great because I was new to youth ministry and I had read every book that Youth Specialties wrote, and for the newer listeners, they don't even know what Youth Specialties is. But I had the idea.
The tail end of that.
Yeah, I had the ideas library. I had cutting edge technology like CD-ROM stuff. Like I had every book and I had read them all. And I just thought, if I just do all of this, then it's gonna be awesome. And one day my wife came to me and she was like, "Look, Brent, like this is not working. We have two small children. We had three kids in 3 years." And at the time we just had two, and she was like, "You're never home. You're always gone. Something's got to change. Something has to change." And I sat down and I was like, you know what? She's 100% right. Like God did not call me to do 1,000 things. And I had to figure out what is giving the most fruit for the time that I'm able, even though I had this, I guess, guilt complex, and I'm paid now to be a youth pastor. I'm paid full time to be a youth pastor. Granted, back then in the mid 90s, I was only making $23,000. So you could say I was paid, but that's not very much, but that was my full time salary. But I just thought because I was being paid full time, I needed to do a lot to justify being paid full time. So I tried to do 1,000 things. And, even to this day, I've learned it's not really the quantity. It's what are you doing that can bear fruit? So that's one of the biggest lessons, even to this day. I mean, there's still a little bit of a struggle with that because you try to do more than maybe you're capable of doing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know. One of the things that I kind of struggled with was almost this, like when you get into that rhythm and when you're really good at it, sometimes for me, I become hyper focused on those things. And so it's, you're doing it so well, it just becomes like cruise control. And suddenly you realize, oh, I'm past office hours or I've been out every night this week and not with my family or different things like that. And because you feel like you're getting satisfaction and you're seeing the growth and everything like that, but it's still that level of having to balance everything out.
Yeah. Youth ministry never stops. I mean, there's always a kid. There's always a volunteer. There's always something. And I'm not saying it should stop, but, even Jesus had to step away from the crowd and go be by. I mean, the Bible says that Jesus felt overwhelmed. There's different words that maybe you could throw in there. But in a sense, his human side, he felt overwhelmed. And so I often think that, if the Son of God needed to pull off and be by himself because the crowds were pressing in, he didn't feel the need to stay and continue to minister to those crowds. And he had the capacity to do it. He had the ability to do it. But he said, that's not necessarily the best thing for me to do. And so, you know, I wouldn't put myself anywhere even close to Jesus. So I think I probably need to step away a little bit more than even what he did. So
I mentioned a little bit of sometimes the comparison thing. And I know specifically with Next Gen and sometimes specifically with youth pastors, although I see it elsewhere as well, but specifically sometimes this comparison trap starts to eat away at a lot of these young leaders and even us older ones. Was there ever a season where you wrestled with comparing yourself maybe on the losing end? Like, why can't I do what these pastors are doing? Why can't I do what these youth ministries are doing? Or maybe on the prideful side where you're like, man, I've got it all together. Why are these guys not doing what I'm doing? And if so, how did God kind of help you with that?
Yeah, and I'll just say both sides will rip you up. I mean, you're either looking down on somebody or you're feeling like you're in the gutter looking up at all these great youth ministries. And, you know, that's – I'm not going to lie. That's still a struggle today. I'm 55, and I've been doing this for a long time. But, you know, with social media, I can jump on any youth – you know, any youth ministry that has a social media site, you know, I can go out there and look at their account and see what they're doing. And of course, they're always posting their best picture. You know, I know how to do it too. I know how to get the right angle so the crowd looks 10 times bigger than it really is. I can take a crowd of four people and make it look like it's a passion conference, you know, with the right camera angles. But, you know, it can eat you up on both ends. And you can either look and see someone else is killing it and you're not so much. And you can look at it and say, you're killing it. And I mean, I'm so much better than everybody else. Early on in ministry, like I said, I was reading a lot of books and there weren't many of them written, but the ones that were written, were all from youth pastors that were successful enough to have written a book that somebody would read. And they were largely from big or mega churches. And, I'll throw out like Purpose Driven Youth Ministry. So I would read that book and what I failed to do was to realize that Doug Fields and Saddleback Church was an entirely different church than what my church was. At the time when I was reading that book, my church was under 300 people and I had 30 kids in my youth group. And so I would read a book like that and think I have to be doing it like that instead of taking the principles from that book and applying it to my ministry. I was thinking my ministry, I need to do that in order to be successful. And so that was a time where I was doing it wrong. It took me a while to realize, like, you can't keep functioning like that. You've got to take the principles and apply the principles. And if your 30 person youth ministry can grow to 35, that's a huge win. That's a huge win. You know, especially if you're in the context Absolutely. Of a church that's only 300 people. But then I have been on, like I said, on the other end where I've gone out and seen somebody's, you know, social media post and I've thought like, man, like I wish I had XYZ, you know, I wish I could do it like that. And so you really do have to be careful, you know, especially in this current climate with social media. You know, back in the day, you'd have to, like I said, read a book or go to somebody else's church and see what they were doing or hear from another youth pastor. And now you can just jump online and you can see, but, you know, now I just tell myself, well, yeah, that's just what they're putting on social media. The rest of their ministry probably sucks. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, I try to think like, you know, good for them. Like that I can learn from anybody. And I've had young guys teach me all kinds of stuff. And hopefully I've taught some other people some stuff too. But I do find in general youth ministry, we don't necessarily try to compete a ton, you know, at least the circles that I run in, there's a temptation to do it, but there's usually not a terrible bent towards, you know, doing ultra comparisons of ministries, but you got to be careful.
Yeah. Like I love on Instagram and different things like that, getting other idea, you know, oh, here's a game. We've never played this. It seems like it's a great game for the students. But then, like you said, it becomes so easy. Like next thing you know, you're like, well, wait a minute. Like, look at how they're worshiping and look at how they're,
sure.
And you end up starting to be envious more than anything of sure. not the students that God has given you. You know, you start becoming envious of other ministries and all that. Yeah. And so it is something to be, to be careful of. Like anything, there are those tools that in the right hands and the right purposes, they work great. But if we're not careful, it can cause us to start spiraling out in the way that we see and view things.
Yeah. And I'll just say this, like, you know, to your point, you use social media and things like that to get ideas, because you don't want to have to learn everything firsthand. Like you do kind of want to learn from people's wins and their losses, their successes and their failures. I use social media, like Instagram in particular. I'm not a big Instagram person, but I'll go out there because that's what youth ministries tend to use. And I will rip everything that your church does off unapologetically. I don't care. Like my church's Instagram for our students is largely based on what other good churches are doing. And I could care less about that because I don't want to spend my life being a Instagram content creator. So keep putting out good stuff, churches, and churches like me are just going to rip off everything that you do. Keep up the good work for the kingdom.
That's awesome. All right, so being seasoned within the ministry, what was a moment that you realized or came to the realization that maybe you had been carrying a lot of it on your own, maybe you had been going through a season or even just an event and you had been carrying the burden so much that you realized you actually took part of that burden away from God and you put it on yourself?
Yeah.
Was there ever a moment where you were just like, I can't carry this all on my own and had to go back to relying on God?
No, I'm too spiritual to make that mistake. No, I'm just kidding. I'd say, you know, within the past couple of years, I was at a church. I was at a multi-site church, and I came in as the they asked me to come in and initially kind of revamp the flagship campus, if you will, the mothership. This was post COVID. And so they hadn't been meeting regularly for worship with their students since COVID. And so they said, come in and kind of like get the ship heading in the right direction for students. And then once you've done that, then take one of your staff and, you can move him into the director spot, and then you can move to kind of be the central guy. And they had 6 or 7 campuses. And so that was the ultimate plan, was for me to be the central guy. And so I came in and started kind of working to, you know, get us back up to speed. And after about 6 or 7 months in, I realized that the number two guy, that he just wasn't getting reps. You know, he wasn't. I was doing all the speaking primarily. I was doing all the leading. I was doing all the volunteer recruiting, and he was there observing it and participating in it and learning. And he was a young guy in his early 20s, so it was okay for him to be doing that. But then I realized, like, the longer I stay in this role, the more I'm hindering his growth. And so one day I just went to the pastor and I said, hey, I think we're at a place right now where I can get out of the way and turn it over to this guy and let him walk point on it. And the pastor was like, hey, it's your call. So I stepped aside, gave him that mantle. He became the director at that campus. And, you know, he's been crushing it ever since. I mean, the campus has doubled in size since you know, I did that. And the campus in terms of students. And I'm not saying it wouldn't have grown under me, because I'm a genius. But it wasn't until I stepped out of the way, not only did it grow in size, but then they had another more developed leader to serve in the long haul and in that capacity. So I kind of felt like God was saying, like, yeah, you can stay here and stay in the spot, and like you can do the speaking and the leading and and all these things. But there's guys under you that aren't going to be able to grow until you get out of the way. And luckily the Lord didn't have to do that with me going kicking and screaming. I was able to do that willingly. But it did allow, like I said, another layer of leaders to grow. And so I think for some of the seasoned guys, and so like, I'm in that position now where now I'm able to coach those guys and still, you know, I'm still in a lot of the daily youth ministry stuff. But only about 50% capacity of daily youth ministry. The other 50% is helping the next layer of leaders under me, who are largely in their 20s and early 30s, develop their skills so that, you know, that we can keep perpetuating that.
That's awesome. And stepping away or stepping to the side is always, I mean, I feel like very few people would actually be willing to do that without going kicking and screaming. And so, man, hats off to you for
it was tough at first.
Call on that and then actually like following through with that.
Yeah, it was tough at first because like suddenly I wasn't the guy, you know, like I wasn't speaking hardly ever. And, you know, when you've been doing that for a long time and then you're not doing it, you kind of are like, well, wait a second. What about me? So you really have to, you know, it was tough on my pride for a little while. So, I mean, that guy's still not as good as I am, but, you know, he does okay.
All right. So you shared kind of at the beginning of how you had to set some healthy expectations, you know, from the whole 1 hour every day when I first get in to, okay, it's important to still do that. But yeah, the hour is kind of like a something that I really can't commit to. Are there any other times that you learn to set healthy expectations for yourself, your ministry, your team, instead of trying to be perfect, like, you know, nothing against some of those churches that run everything by like the second and everything has to be like run to a T perfection wise. But like, was there ever a moment where you had to start setting better, healthy expectations for everything that you kind of had a hand in?
I'll speak. I think I know how to answer this question, and I'll speak to kind of the topic. I had to learn, and I would encourage a lot of folks in ministry, whether they're new and young in ministry or have a few more years, but you got to think more incremental growth. Like you can't think that you're swinging for the fences trying to hit home runs all the time. I'm not saying God can't operate that way, because he certainly can do whatever he wants. I just have been around long enough to know that he typically has chosen not to work that way. And some of that may be because, you know, he's still trying to do a work in you and in your leadership. And if he gave you too much, you probably wouldn't be able to handle it. So I've seen him do that in me, where I wanted him to give me more favor, more blessing, more fruit, and he didn't. And that's frustrating. But I think, you know, and even to this day, that what he's probably doing, he's probably like, Brent, if I gave you that, it'd be like giving you, you know, a loaded gun. You'd probably do damage with it. You know what I'm saying? Like you probably aren't capable, you know, of handling that. And so I would just speak to folks and say, man, really take ministry incremental growth, with incremental growth in mind, small steps. You know, develop your processes, develop your systems, make sure you're solid in the fundamental things that aren't going to provide just flash for today, but are going to still be able to produce and scale as your ministry grows, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years from now, even if you're not around to be the beneficiary of it. You know, like with volunteer leaders, like don't go for the quick, let's just try to fill a hole. You know, I look at it like there's four layers of volunteerism. There's like, hey, let's just cross our fingers and hope everything works out. You know, then there's, hey, we have enough leaders just to fill all the holes. They're not necessarily great leaders, but there's enough of them. We guilted some people into serving, and so they signed up. Then the next level after that, the third level is we've got ideal leaders, people that love the Lord and are committed discipling kids. And then the fourth layer of leaders is we've got great leaders who are committed discipling kids who are also committed to going out and finding other great leaders. And if you can get to that fourth level of leaders, then that can scale to any size God decides to grow your ministry, whether that's growing your ministry from 5 students to 12 students or 50 students to 200 students. Like if you can just get to the leadership level where your leaders love discipling students, but also are committed to going out and finding other adult leaders who love discipling students, you've just scaled your ministry in a phenomenal way that there's not very many youth ministries out there that are focused on that. Most of the time, it's level one or level two. Level one, cross your fingers and hope we fill our spots. And number two, okay, we filled our spots. We have enough warm bodies that all of our holes are patched. And it's like, now we can kick off the school year without sweating it. And let's hope we get through this. And that brings a whole layer of stress and anxiety and pressure, not just on you, but on the framework of your youth ministry. And so thinking incrementally, you might not be able to get to level four right away, but it's the mindset of thinking that's where we want to get, and we're going to get there, but it's going to be incremental growth, or even the size of your student attendance. You know, don't think of doubling your attendance by doing one big outreach or one big whatever, but think about, like, we have 12 kids. Let's just be faithful with the two new students that showed up tonight and follow up with them, because now we're not at 12. Now we're at 14. And, you know, then someday we'll be at 20, and then we'll get to 30, and, you know, then we'll get to 37, you know, and just think incremental growth as you disciple and as you show yourself faithful. Those are just some things that I have learned along the way, more so by having to make errors and doing it the wrong way, but then figuring out. So it's kind of, I hope it's probably a little bit long.
That's awesome.
It's probably a little bit around the mountain in order to get to where you were going. But man, I hope if somebody grabs a hold of that could help you out. That could really help your ministry out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I know, even starting off in youth ministry, my thing was always the kind of swing big to the fences. And while you said, you know, if that's what God wants to do, that God's going to do it. But in the same aspect, so many leaders kind of shoot themselves in the foot with it, because they swing wide for the fence and God gives them two new students, and we get depressed and beat up over it,
yeah,
rather than thanking God for the two new students that we have.
There's a scripture somewhere in Exodus where they're in the wilderness, and they're in the promised land. I'm losing track on this one. But they, God doesn't allow them to rout all their enemies all at once. And he says, I'm only going to allow you to, like, kill them off little by little, because if you kill them off all at once, the wild animals wouldn't be kept at bay and they would overwhelm you. And I remember I read that scripture and I was like, that's exactly how God works. Like, you pray for this one big thing for God to do it, but God knows that there's three other things that are going to eat you up even worse. Like, so for the guy out there, the girl out there that's thinking, like, how come God isn't doing this in my ministry? How come God isn't sending me these leaders or these kids or this event or whatever? I think I wouldn't say think small, because with God, you always want to be thinking big, but his big is different than our big. And, I think sometimes you just have to think a little bit more in terms of, like, fruitfulness, like what is going to produce fruit for the long haul, not what's going to double my industry and my ministry. That's more of a secular mindset. Like, you know, how do we get to six figures, or how do we get to this, you know, number of success in our business or whatever. God just doesn't typically work that way in his economy, because he's trying to usually do something in us or prevent something from happening, like pride.
Yeah. All right. So let's say that there's a leader who's listening or watching this, and they're just tired. Maybe they've made some of those bad choices, and they just feel like, you know, man, I just can't get a footing here. Or maybe they started off so strong and they wore too much of that weight on their own, and now they just feel completely drained. If you were sitting down with that person, what is the one single biggest truth about ministry you wish that they would grab a hold of today?
Yeah, that's tough. Because it's broad. I would say, if we make the assumption that that person has been called into ministry and is in generally the right place, so then we pick up that question. I would say, you know, in the ministry coaching that I do, quite a few of the people that I've dealt with over the years, it's really self-inflicted. And I hate to say that, because your listener out there feels like I'm just dumping on them, but I would say an overwhelming amount of ministry burnout is self-inflicted. And that means we're not sharpening the axe. We're continuing to cut wood with a dull axe. And some of that is spiritual. That means you're doing ministry for the glory of ministry, not for the glory of God. And so you might need to do a tough evaluation, either just in introspectively, or getting somebody like a mentor or somebody outside to kind of look at your life and help you examine where you're at. Because if you're not filled up, and you're not able to pour out. So some of that could be spiritually self-inflicted. But unfortunately, this keeps me employed in my side gig of coaching, is that a lot of people, it's self-inflicted, because they just don't have themselves together. They don't know how to time block. They don't know how to organize their day. They don't know how to organize their week. They don't know how to think long-term. They don't have a strategy. You know, they think, you know, pizza and a great worship band is a strategy. You know, they're not thinking strategic and organizationally. And a youth ministry is an organization, and it has to be organized. And God, if he's called you, he's called you to some level of organization. And most of the folks that I'll hear, especially the very young ones, will say, But that's not my giftedness. My giftedness is speaking, and I'm relational and being with people and hanging with kids. And I'm like, great, but quit making excuses. Like, you can learn to be organizational. Like, you can learn some skills. You can get your calendar together. You can learn how to be more efficient in planning a sermon. You know, you can learn to create an event calendar and a preaching calendar. And like, there's so much that you can do to buy back time, to batch tasks, and to get yourself so organized that you redeem hours back to A, make sure your spiritual life is healthy, B, to make sure your family isn't being neglected, and C, to make sure that you're doing all the things in ministry that God called you to do, like disciple kids and build a leadership team. So unfortunately, I would say those people that are burned out, if we assume they're called by God in ministry and they're in generally the right, on the right bus, on the right seat in the right bus, I would say an overwhelming part of that is it's self-inflicted, either spiritual self-inflicted or lack of developing themselves organizationally and administratively. Those are two things that you can easily correct. Those are two things that are easy to, well, not easy, but they are correctable, because you can get right with God and you can figure it out. And there's a ton of resources out there, you know, both paid and unpaid, where you can go out and get the skills that you lack. And if you don't do that, then I would say you're probably either not called by God, you're being disobedient to God because you're not developing your craft and your calling, or you just don't care. That's tough to hear, but it's true.
No, that's great. And it is, a lot of it is, like you said, sometimes we're just not equipped enough or don't have the right balance enough. And we end up, you know, some of the hurt is self-inflicted. And the good thing is that there are a lot of those areas, like you said, that we can continue to grow in and continue to learn in. I mean, I've been in the ministry for a little over 15 years, and there's still new stuff that I'm learning, and still levels of education that, you know, I might not be in classes anymore, but I'm picking up new books on topics and different things. And you know, we're constantly, like you said, sharpening that axe.
And I would say too, get your eyes off of another role. Like, God may call you to be a pastor, a lead pastor or something else one day, but let him step you into that calling. Quit trying to be a lead pastor when God's called you right now to be a youth pastor, and quit trying to focus all your time on being a great preacher. Like, everybody wants to preach. Everybody wants to have that, you know, YouTube clip or that, you know, social media clip where they're killing it on stage, you know, exegeting God's word. Quit trying to seek after that. Like that's great if you have preaching skills, and we always want to get better. I'm not the greatest preacher, and I wish I was some of these guys out there. But I see too many guys that if they're working a 40 or 50 hour work week, they're spending 25 hours doing sermon prep and leaving little to nothing else for all the other areas of youth ministry, that, you know, neglecting that, and your ministry is going to stink, and it's going to be your fault. That's harsh truth, but I'd rather say it like it is.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, thank you very much for just taking this time and having this conversation with me again. This is Brent, and he's quite seasoned within the ministry. Before we go, do you want to give a plug to? I know you mentioned your coaching thing. Do you want to just share a little brief synopsis of the coaching thing for anyone that might hear it and might be interested?
Sure. Yeah, I do youth ministry next gen coaching. That's nextgenleadercoaching.org. Basically, I try to help people figure out their biggest challenges and help them overcome those challenges so they can produce fruit in their ministry. So anybody that needs that, I'm one of many resources to reach out to, but I'm probably better than most of the others.
That's a great plug. And we'll have that in the description as well, the link to that website. Well, thank you again, Brent, just for giving us some of the things that you've learned over the years and being open with us.
Thanks for doing it, man. We need podcasts to talk a little bit more than just attendance and how big is my church.